So reading text 38, 39, and 40, finishing this chapter. We can just read the text together. Shri Apurvacha Rajam Manishitam Sajya Tavasvataya Marjanam Sidhya Sidhya Samam Puryat Daivam Hi Palasaranam. Okay, all right, I'll read the translation. Shri Akura said, O King, you have expertly devised a process to free yourself of misfortune. Still, one should be equal in success and failure, since it is certainly destiny that produces the results of one's work. Text 39. Manuratam karotayuchar janodaiva hatamati yujate harsishokyam satapti agyam karomate. Translation by Papa. An ordinary person is determined to act on his desires even when fate prevents their fulfillment. Therefore, he encounters both happiness and distress. Yet even though such is the case, I will execute your order. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that although what Akura said was courteous and encouraging, his hidden meaning was far different. What he really meant was this. Your plan is not fit to execute, yet I will carry it out, since you are the king and I am your subject, and in any case, you are about to die. Text 40. Sri Shukubhacha Eva Madhishtha Puram Mantrinascha Vishishyasa Pavishvesha Viham Kamsas Tathapura Swayam Arayam. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus instructed Akura, King Kamsa dismissed his ministers and retired to his quarters, and Akura returned home. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta part of the Humble Servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 36th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Slaying of Arista, the Bull Demon. So here, Akura is showing some of his expertise in diplomacy also. I guess it runs in the family. There he's able to encourage, as it says here, encourage Kamsa, and he was very polite, just like Shiva Papa told us to be very polite in preaching and say, oh yes, and glorify the person, yes, yes, you're so wonderful and this and that, and then, but actually you're a fool, you don't know anything, and then now listen to me. So in the same way, he's encouraging Kamsa. And at the same time, he's saying, better watch out for that destiny, because guess what? But he, Kamsa is, as it's described here, he's an ordinary person, or less an ordinary person, in that he is determined to fulfill his desires. He has his plan already mapped out, first this, then that, and then if that doesn't work, that's going to work, and if that doesn't work, for sure, Krishna and Balaram are going to be finished. So this is the nature of that kind of class of person who is so determined to have, be in control of everything. But unfortunately, we're always overridden by the supreme authority, always by our Lord Sri Krishna. So it's described here that that's the ordinary person, but devotees are extraordinary, because when something like this happens, they automatically understand that Krishna's in control. When something doesn't go our way or something wonderful happens, it's Krishna's mercy, it's Krishna. And so this is the advantages of of being a devotee is that we can always see Krishna in the light and be very equipoised at, no matter what's going on. But that means that we have to be pure. Otherwise, this relay of Krishna, remembering Krishna, it doesn't happen. If there's fog, just like yesterday morning, it was so foggy here, you couldn't see hardly anything. If we're still fogged over by this illusion of hankara, as Shesha was describing yesterday, of thinking that we're the controller in any regard, even the slightest, then that remembrance doesn't happen. And we're still thinking, oh, but I'm sure if I just do this, I'm sure it'll happen, right? Not until we really are pure does that relay become very clear, and that our hearts have to be pure. And that takes a lot of work of surrender, which we're all finding out after many years. We're still working on it. But it's described that God has his plans. I mean, we have our plans, but God, he just laughs at our plans. Just like today at Srimad Bhagavatam class, they said that I was giving class. And I had all other kinds of plans. I didn't know I was giving class. So I'm sure Krishna was just laughing. Guess what? You're supposed to give class today. So anyway, we have our plans, and God chuckles over it. So we have to be careful of not always making our plans and not including Krishna, just like these 230 persons that are now disappeared out of nowhere on this plane, mystically. They all had plans, all 230, however many of them all had a plan of where they were going, what they were doing. And is it not on? Okay, and so only God can organize such a change of plans mystically. Even then, people are noticing that, you know, where's the plan? It's such a mystical thing. What happened? So Krishna, but he mystically arranges that according to the desire, the destiny, the karma, the circumstances, this happened to all these different people. So every single day and every single minute, what's happening is actually by the supreme plan of Krishna. And the devotee recognizes that and gives credit, whether good or bad occurrences, we give the credit to Krishna. And only Krishna could have that responsibility to be able to organize all that. It's pretty amazing what God and his team can do. He doesn't have to worry about it himself, but he has a whole team which are very expert at it. And I was told when I first became a devotee and I was trying to get something done, some project or something like that, and thinking I was definitely in the control of everything, and I was wondering, why isn't it happening? And I asked an authority, they said, well, if after three times it doesn't work, that means that Krishna must have some other plan. So I kind of keep that in mind when I'm really enthusiastic about something. Try it once, try it twice, try it three times, and then I kind of go back and say, okay, Krishna, have a discussion. Well, okay, what do you want? So we have to realize that for more than three times, three to an infinite exponent, we've been trying to be the controller here, birth after birth, birth after birth, trying to figure out how we can enjoy, how we can be happy in this material world. But in this one lifetime, we should make it our priority to not be that controller and to let Krishna take over. And of course, that priority becomes manifest in our chanting. We're actually chanting every day, oh Lord, please engage me in your service. Please use me. Please accept me. At least accept me that I'm trying to be your servant. And sincerity means that we're actually chanting with all heart and soul. We're actually really meaning it. Okay, today, whatever you want me to do, whatever you want to do with me today, do it. And so if we are actually chanting like that all the time, every minute, then we have that pure heart, and Krishna can do wonderful things with it. When you read Srila Prabhupada's prayer coming into the Boston port, that sincerity of the pure devotee, of let me be a puppet in your hands. Make me dance. Whatever you want to do with me, you can do. And with that sincerity, just see what Srila Prabhupada did.
with this whole planet. The whole planet has been changed because of Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada also encouraged us to chant with all of our hearts and soul to make ourselves available with this one lifetime, make it our priority, not to be the supreme controller, but to be the supreme surrendered soul that we really should be. And eternally we'll benefit by that. If you go to Bhagavad Gita, you'll see that Arjuna had his plan, and he got a little bewildered and goes, well, I don't know if I really want to execute your plan, Krishna, because this doesn't sound like it's going to be a lot of fun fighting on this battle. And so then he proposed a plan. He said, okay, well, actually, I think ultimately he said, maybe I'll just say, you can have it, and I'm just going to go chant Hare Krishna or go with the forest and renounce everything. But Krishna actually had to convince him to surrender to him, and that he had a better plan, and that would you please let me use you in this plan? And so he did become convinced, but it wasn't without suffering. It wasn't that it wasn't a painful experience to surrender. I don't know if any of you ever experienced actually surrendering. It can be very painful, you know, in the beginning. I mean, when you see that, the DVD of Arjuna, you know, the Mahabharata, Arjuna having to put arrows into Bhishma, with every single arrow he puts in, that he's just like, you can just see the pain shooting in his heart, that he, putting arrows in your grandfather, you know, hundreds and hundreds. And so it's not easy to surrender. And so we should expect that there will be happiness and distress, things will go on that are not expected. And so we have to realize that, but the pain and the fear that Kamsa's going through, can you imagine? Ever since that one voice in the sky said, guess what, someone's going to kill you, that he was fearful his whole life. And it's not fun to be scared. I don't know if you've ever been in a country. I was in Colombia for a while, and I had my daughter, and I was always fearful because they kidnap kids, especially nice little blonde-haired, cute little kids, you know. I was fearful the whole time I was there. And ultimately, I did have something ripped off my neck, and it was no fun to be in a fearful situation. So Kamsa had that fear the whole time. It's very painful. You can imagine your whole life. And now he's thinking, and then he got all these demons, and one by one, they've been knocked off by Krishna. And or Balaram, he did his share too. And now he's got his last final plan, and as Akrua is suggesting that, guess what, your plans might get turned around on you. He is, as we see in the next, imagine in the next chapter, where he, even in his dreams, he can't sleep, he's seeing himself being disturbed and everything, so he's not a happy camper. Although he's thinking he's the controller. So this is a pain, much more painful. Jarasandha, that demon, just think of his ego. If your ego has ever been slapped really hard, how painful it is, because we're so close to that ego, it's so encumbersome. Jarasandha, 17 times he got defeated. Oh, come on, it's not so bad. You're actually good, you know, and then bam, so, you know, down again 17 times. Pretty stubborn. And so many other demons, one after another, the plans are foiled and crushed. So we have to be reminded, and sometimes Krishna arranges different ways to remind us of our real position, and how that if you do surrender to me and accept a little bit of uncomfortness, maybe sometimes, but actually that I will take all the pain away. I don't know if you... I've experienced lately that, you know, my mind's been very disturbed and things like that, which is a great great pain when your mind doesn't let go and just harps at you. But then if I just surrender and realize, yes, Krishna, you know, and chant Hare Krishna really sincerely or just pray or read something, then the pain actually goes away. It actually goes away. You know, we sometimes lose our faith in this process and we get so hung up in some way we're thinking that we're the controller. If I do this, if I do that, even in devotional service, everything will be all right. But if, when it doesn't go all right, And if we just chant Hare Krishna somehow or other, it's just like, it's just wonderful. Just the pain goes away. So we have to really have our faith. And as we get older, all different kinds of pains are going to get, material pains are going to come and surface. And so it's a real test for our sincerity in the shelter of the holy name. So we have to realize that when we start deciding to put up priority that, yes, this lifetime I'm going to surrender, then Krishna, we have to realize that he's aware of that. He hears it. He senses it. That yes, okay, this one lifetime. And it's not going to be easy for that person, so I'll give help. So immediately Krishna does what? He sends a spiritual master to you. We all have our stories of how all of a sudden in our search or in this distress, all of a sudden there was Prabhupada or a book or our guru or Krishna was there. And then our life, you know, life force was revived. So Krishna is very sensitive to that. As soon as we desire to serve him more and more, he will make those arrangements. Because we're not doing such a great job of surrendering, but the spiritual master can help us. So he sends the spiritual master to take over and say, okay, now this is the process. It's a bona fide process. He gives us a means of, okay, now, don't speculate. This is the way to surrender. And this way we can see that Krishna can do a great job. And if we cooperate and we fully surrender all the time, then he can take us back into his arms. Actually, it's a perfect policy plan. It's our secure plan. You know that Allstate commercial where they go, you're in good hands with the spiritual master, with the Allstate. So in this way we can realize that we really need to learn what our spiritual master wants, and that is being dictated, that's what Krishna wants. So we can no longer have that pain of surrender by seeing that the spiritual master is pleased with our service. And we do see that. If you don't see it, the other devotees see it in your services and appreciate your services in many ways. So we have to become very determined to be fully surrendered this lifetime. As fully determined as it's described here, that someone like these ordinary persons, they're very determined to act on their own desires and whims and to get what they want. But we have to be more determined, because their determination has a foolproof plan also. It's going to be a disappointment. For sure, they're going to be disappointed in whatever they think they're going to control and get accomplished in this lifetime. So we have to feel fully protected and go about being very happy in our service and very satisfied. So the spiritual master, he gives us the expectation that we're going to get the best thing. And we will. Eternally, we will not have to take these births and deaths anymore. And we'll actually find the end that all suffering is finished. Kamsa, you know, his suffering was just beginning, although he got some liberation, but he didn't get the full happiness that the devotee will get. And so that brings us to a great personality whose disappearance day it is today, who had some plans revealed to him in a very different way, through dreams. And that's Madhavendra Puri. He had three dreams directly given the plan by Krishna, which is pretty miraculous. I don't think any of us are that pure that we're getting so many dreams directly from Krishna telling us what to do and what not to do. Anyone had some recent dreams of Krishna appearing in front of you? No. I don't think I've ever had that opportunity. But it's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Chaitanya was traveling to Jagannath Puri and stopped in Rimuna. Rimuna isn't very far near Balasore. Been there quite a few times. Wonderful place to visit. Put it on your parikrama schedule for sure in this lifetime. Don't miss going there. It's a wonderful temple. And so he stopped, Lord Chaitanya stopped with the disciples in Ramuna, and actually Lord Chaitanya had heard the story of the Gopal deity and of by his spiritual master Ishwar Puri. And actually this deity was installed by Brajanath, grandson of Krishna. And at one time the Muslims invaded the Vrindavan area, the Govardhan area, where this deity was installed and worshipped. And the pujaris put it in the bushes so it wasn't destroyed. And now this deity, you can go, another nice place of pilgrimage is Nathdwar. You can go see that deity now in Nathdwar. So Lord Chaitanya, actually when he went into the temple at Ramuna, he paid his obeisances, and the deity's garland from the deity's crown, the head, it fell down and fell on the head of Lord Chaitanya. Pretty far out. And so he told this, told the story of the Gopal deity. But we hear of Madhavendra Puri visiting also, having a visit by Gopal directly in the dream. Madhavendra Puri was visiting the Govardhan area, Vrindavan area, and was chanting, sitting at the base of Govardhan, chanting on his beads, the great saint that he is, and definitely a role model for all of us because of his humility and his surrender, his example of full surrender. And so he was chanting very purely, which of course is the source of that purity. And so he was sitting there, and he had kind of make like a vow not to beg for food. If it came, he would eat. If not, then he wouldn't eat. And so all of a sudden a little cowherd boy comes up with a pot of milk and puts it in front of him, and as a little person does, he inquires lots of questions. He says, "Who are you? Where are you from?" And he's asking Madhavendra Puri, "You know, what are you meditating on? And what are you doing chanting? And how come you're not eating anything? Looks like you're fasting. And why are you fasting?" And many, many questions. And then he says, "You know that no one goes hungry in this village, you know. And I've got some nice milk here, so make sure you take it." And he says, "Actually, if you go begging around here, you can get people give you so much. You don't have there's no need to fast here. And so he finished with some of his questions, and Madhavendra Puri, meanwhile, was looking at this little boy and thinking, "Boy, he's really enchanting person, so beautiful." And so then the boy just kind of put the pot down and vanished. And then so he drank the milk, and and then he became tired, and he went to sleep, and the cowherd boy appeared in his dream. And the cowherd boy took him by the hand in the dream to some bushes near Govardhan, and pointed and said, "A long time ago, I was installed here as a deity," and he told the story. And now I've been put in these bushes, and I've been going through the heat and the rain and the everything, and please, you know, I'm in so much discomfort, please. Actually, I've been waiting for Madhavendra Puri to come here. I'm so pleased with his service attitude, with this devotee. I've been just waiting for you to come here to take me out of these bushes, to bathe me in some cool waters, and to establish me on top of Govardhan Hill and make a temple for me." And so then the dream broke. And Madhavendra Puri went, "I can't believe that cowherd boy that came to me yesterday was actually Krishna." And so he was just like overwhelmed, and he like fainted in ecstasy. And so then he told the realization that he'd had to the residents around that area, and they actually dug up the deity. And they got water from the Govinda Kumbh, and then they bathed him with some cool waters, and then everybody got excited, and all the residents came, and they actually brought this and that and that, and they brought a stone and they put them up on the mountain, and then people started bringing chapatis and loads of rice and ghee, and people started donating cows, and Brahmins came to offer service, and they had this Anakut ceremony. It didn't just go on for one day. It went on for days and weeks, and it was just like a continuous festival of worship to this deity, which is, he says, actually the little cowboy in the dream said, "I'm Gopal, I'm a lifter of Govardhan Hill." And so they named the deity Gopal. And so this wonderful deity worship that Madhavendrapuri started went on for many years. And then he had another dream, and Krishna came again and said, "Actually, I'm still kind of hot." He says, "I would like some nice sandalwood from the Malayan Hills, and I would like you to go there personally and bring it and rub it on me so I'm cool with the sandalwood." And so then immediately upon waking, he arranged for the deity to be taken care of, the worship to go on nicely, and he set off on foot south. And that's a long jog down south. And so he stopped in Shantipur first, and he saw Advaita Acharya, and actually at that time is when Advaita Acharya asked Madhavendrapuri for initiation. So we could see what a great personality is that Advaita Acharya is asking for initiation to Madhavendrapuri. And so then he makes his way to Omasujagnathpuri, but he stops in Ramuna and sees the deity of Gopinath. And I've been told, I think Lakshmani told me, that this deity was, he's like a bas relief. He's carved out of a stone, and it was carved by the arrow of Lord Ram. Yeah. And he's a beautiful deity. And you can actually, if you go there, you can watch him being dressed. And they take the cloth and they wrap it from one deity to another. Some other beautiful, gorgeous deities are there on each side, just gorgeously shaped. You could watch them all being bathed and dressed in the morning. Just don't get caught with the camera. And so then, he actually gets to take a little taste of that prasad on this Amrita Kale. He'd also heard that this one preparation, just it was ecstatic preparation, it's like a cooked down condensed milk. And so he got a little bit of that and thought, boy, this is such a nice preparation. And he was inquiring, you know, how do you make this? And then he was thinking, you know, he was thinking of offering it to his deity, Gopal. He wanted first class service. And he thought, I'm thinking about something that's not offered. It's bhoga. And so he was like lamenting. And he just went off to the marketplace and chanted, tried to purify his mind. But he wasn't thinking of honoring himself. He was just thinking of the deities. But he was such a pure heart. He was thinking that maybe he made some aparad. And so he was chanting, lamenting, and he was in the marketplace. And then at nighttime, the pujari the deity appeared to him in a dream and said that actually, you missed it, but I had hidden something underneath my cloth in the back, and I have a pot of this Amrita Kale to give to my great devotee, Madhavendrapuri, and he's in the marketplace. Go find him and give him and told him that the deity Gopinath has stolen this for you. And so sure enough the pujari woke up and found the pot and went to the marketplace calling out, "If there's anyone Madhavendrapuri in this marketplace, the deity of Gopinath has stolen this sweet rice to you." And of course everyone went, "Wow, the deity is stolen from, who is this Madhavendrapuri?" And so then he was given the pot, and he ate the remnants, and then he broke the pot, and then he kept the pot, the broken pieces, in his cloth. And every day he would eat a little bit of the pot, even, because it was such nectar. But then he was worried that because he was becoming, you know, kind of famous, even though it was because of humility and great service, he didn't want that respect and humility, so he kind of went off, and he went to Jagannath Puri to finish his mission of getting the sandalwood pulp. But by the time he got there, also his reputation had followed him, and they had realized what a great devotee he was. And so it was hard to keep the crowds away and everything. But he got the sandalwood, and actually the king helped him. And it was heavy. You know, wood is very heavy. And so he arranged for, you know, passage and for people to help carry it and everything. And then he got back to Raymuna and stopped there again to see the Gopinath deity. And again, Madhavendrapuri has a dream. And the Gopal deity says, "Oh, you know, such nice service you've done, all this wonderful cooling sandalwood pulp." He says, "But such a burden for you to carry all the way, again, hundreds and hundreds of miles. Just rub it on the deity there, and I will be satisfied, because we are non-different." And so upon waking, he did that, and he stayed there every day. He would grind it, and they would put it on the Gopinath deity, and he stayed there for quite a time, a bit of time, and relished the association of the Gopinath deity. So we can, by this, not only just the example of Madhavendrapuri, of his humility and everything, that we can see how this attitude of surrender is so pleasing to the Lord, that immediately upon hearing instructions and understanding the plan of the Lord, executing them, that the Lord is satisfied. And with that satisfaction, the Lord bestows so much more of that clear, transparent, realizations to you. So if for some reason you find yourself not happy or not feeling like you really know what Krishna wants, it's because there's some fog. And because our sincerity is lacking in our chanting, there's really, or else we're not executing the order of our spiritual master. So every day we should consider, you know, how was my chanting today? Was I really in that mood of, please accept me, whatever you want me to do, I'll do today, however you ever want to use me? And if we don't continuously do that, then the fog, when will it be lifted? What lifetime will it be lifted? When will we actually really understand what Krishna wants of us in this lifetime, so that we can fully execute his order and surrender? And we shouldn't be too fearful of actually praying, not only, you know, use me, but, you know, can you speed it up a little bit? I don't have many years left. I'd like to finish this whole program in this lifetime. And whatever it takes, you know, do what's needed so that I can not have to come again and have to figure out another lifetime of, what did I do wrong? What can I do more for Krishna? But help us to make more advancement. And with that advancement, try to help others. Not that we just want to, go off and chant. I think we've been hearing in the early morning about, I think it was this morning even, where we heard that one shouldn't go off and think they can just chant by themselves to neophyte. But we should actually, stay close to ISKCON and help move this ISKCON forward and liberate many, many souls. Whatever advancement we can use it to spread Krishna consciousness, because it's all really for Srila Prabhupada's execution of Lord Chaitanya's order to deliver everyone. So whatever we can do to be part and increase that part more and more. So these are a few thoughts. Maybe someone else has some other details about Madhavendrapuri, some more about his life. This is the pastime that I think of when I think of Madhavendrapuri, is the Kirchhora Gopinath and his humility and being so sincere that the deity even stole for him, and that he did that wonderful, wonderful gesture. No more details? Come on, Pushkar, you must have some other details.
Story when Advaitacharya would celebrate Madhavendrapuri's appearance day in a big, big way. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, and everybody was there, and it's described stacks and stacks of boga and prasadam. No one knew how it got there. There was all kind of facility, and hundreds of people taking the feast.
Aniyur, Aniyur. That's when Krishna said, Aniyur, Aniyur, right? I want more, I want more. Even though they were giving him so much, he's saying, I want more, I want more.
That's part of it. But this is taking place in the Dvaitacharya's house, not in Govardhan. But I'm saying he celebrated it every year in a big, big, huge way. Chaitanya over there, and Nityananda, so many people. It's a big chapter, at least, in Chaitanya Bhagavatam. I don't remember the chapter. Mm. But it's a big section there. Just the glorification by Dvaitacharya.
Srila Prabhupada had expressed Madhavendra Puri in his purport to one of the verses in the Bhagavatam, which was real nice. In the purport, he quotes two prayers, I guess, by Madhavendra Puri, which are always nice. One about the Karmakanda section. He says, my evening prayer, all good unto you. O my morning bath, I bid you goodbye. O demigods and forefathers, please excuse me. I am unable to perform any more offerings for your pleasure. Now I have decided to free myself from all reactions to sins simply by remembering anywhere and everywhere the great descendant of the Yadu and the great enemy of Kamsa, Lord Krishna. Mm-hmm. I think that this is sufficient for me, so what is the use of any further endeavors? Because when you were singing that song, Who Brought the Treasure House of Love of God, we naturally you'd think of Madhavendra Puri. And then you had mentioned also about his humility, so I thought this verse here is a nice example of that, where he says, let the sharp moralists accuse me of being illusioned. I do not mind. Experts in Vedic activities may slander me as being misled. Friends and relatives may call me frustrated. My brothers may call me a fool. The wealthy Mammonites may point me out as mad. And the learned philosophers may assert that I am much too proud. Still, my mind does not budge an inch from the determination to serve the lotus feet of Govinda, although I am unable to do it. So,
nice prayer. He was saying some prayers at the time of his death about, this Krishna and everything. And then Ramachandra Puri was an example of the reverse of how not to please your spiritual master. And he was so disgusted with his attitude of being criticized by his disciple that he said, get out of here, I don't want to see your face. So that's the reverse. Whereas I was just reading some past tense of Prabhupada when he was leaving, how happy he was to see all the devotees coming in, so pleased with their service. Yes?
When we got the deity of Gopinath in Toronto, when we got the deity's home to the Toronto temple, Gopinath was a little pudgy. So I wrote Srila Prabhupada that we had gotten this deity of Krishna, and he was a little fatty around the waist. And so Prabhupada wrote back, and he said, oh, very nice. Then you can name him Kirchur Gopinath, and you can call the temple Nuremuna, because Kirchur Gopinath used to eat kheer very much, and he actually stole kheer for his devotee. So in the temple now is Kirchur Gopinath. He's a little pudgier now.
Have to get the seams just to keep making the waist bigger. That's happened in temples, mystically, somehow or other. You have to change the pattern every once in a while. Jai Shri Madhavendra Puri Ki Jai.